is Sportsfeld for another week. It is. Listen, if anybody listening to this has the Sportsfeld Patreon, which we appreciate and love you first and foremost. Second of all, I mean, this Monday, I ventured as deeply into meltdown mode as I have gotten out loud. I think, you know, I am somebody who will say, as for example, I think I said last week we were in meltdown mode. Nothing compared to my actions over the weekend after losing against the fucking Tigers and the fucking shithouse Washington Nationals, who traded every player that isn't Juan Soto on their roster. Listen, I said it then, and I will say it again now. I am not saying these words, but, Jake, if you or somebody you know was the type of person who, after Sunday's extra innings loss, or after Friday's complete bunglefuck of a game, if either one of those games, or anything that's happened to you in August, if any of those things, if this week you come at me and you say, August 25th, 2021, I think the season is over, I would not blame you for feeling that way. I don't feel that way personally because I am sick in the head, and I will go down until there are less games left than there are games back. But listen, if you are of the mood that their season ended this weekend, I'm not going to try to talk you out of it. How about that?
Okay. I think that's fair. I'm going to start rationally before we get into the meltdown take section of the show, which I presume will be most of the show. The only rational thought I have is this just came down, but by the time you're listening to this, you'll have known it for many hours. And that is, I am going to ask Blue Jays Twitter. I know we're all on edge right now, and justifiably so. But I'm going to ask you to please, please, do not make Connor Overton being sent down a thing. He was great yesterday, but please don't make this the thing where you start saying, wow, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's a lot, which we're going to get to melt down over and say they don't know what they're doing, all of which are more valid reasons than Connor Overton being sent down. And maybe it just might be because he pitched three innings yesterday. I haven't seen anyone doing this yet. I'm just getting out ahead of it because the news just came down.
Appreciate
and I
that.
I can tell that it's... I could see this being a real, like, flashpoint of things.
Yeah, I think you touched on it, and I think Ben Nicholson-Smith tweeted to that effect is really, with the way that bullpens are made these days, the fact that he had pitched three very good innings the day before means that he's probably not available on Thursday and probably not available Wednesday. You need to always have a full stable of guys who throw hard and can be used in innings. It's Joaquin Soria coming back up, so they're not, you know, it's not trading him out for Jeremy Beasley. It's not Tyler Chatwood, though who knows? I've only seen one inning of Soria in the last 6 years, to be frank. I feel the same way, Jake. There was Mike Wilner tweeted out that today a bunch of guys were taking bunting practice. And listen, I'm not a bunting fan, right? I'm not somebody who's like, oh, good, they're bunting. But I feel like aside from like the Friday situation, my dislike of bunting generally doesn't grow beyond I wish they hadn't bunted there. Like people foam at the mouth when bunts get put down. And I get it. I understand the rationale. I understand the math. But I'm not going to be sitting here extremely upset with the news that Braivik Valera was taking bunting practice. Does not bother me in the slightest. I'm fired up and mad about a lot of stuff with this team right now. A lot of things are bothering me. I have a lot of concerns. You know, the 26th man reliever getting sent down and the worst hitters on the team bunting practice does not upset me. Many, 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 many things are on that list above this.
I think bunting practice and your opinion on bunting is actually a great segue to get into, let's call it meltdown take number one.
Sure.
So I'm sure we're going to have a few. Like your opinion on bunting, that it's annoying, but like not the end of the world. And not a thing. I agree with you. It's also not something that like makes me go absolutely crazy. However, there are situations in which it does, which ties into my point that I'm going to start with today, which is I have said a few times in the last few weeks, a few months even, that I feel the Blue Jays front office has taken some half measures to prepare this team for this season. And I think it's only fair if I'm going to criticize the team for half measures, that I stop taking half measures of my own. And so to that effect, I say that Charlie Montoyo should have been fired last week.
Boy.
And the reason I'm saying linking this to bunting is not because of asking someone to bunt, but just in concept, like bunting, I feel the idea of managers really affecting the game that much to be a wildly overrated prospect, which we've talked about before. However, there does come a point where you're so bad at it that it does matter. And it's not, I'm not going to sit here and say it's Charlie's fault that they scored like 4 runs against the Tigers. I'm certainly not going to say that. I'm not going to say it's Charlie's fault that Vlad is slumping. It's not Charlie's fault that Springer got hurt. None, even his absolutely unbelievably atrocious handling of pinch hitting in last Friday's game against the Tigers. Even that, I will say, you know what? It happens. He made a call. It didn't work out. But in a playoff race, which for better or for worse, the Blue Jays are currently in, somehow still, the little decisions, especially when it comes to the bullpen, really matter. And you see it in games like last night against the White Sox, where they were down 4-0 in the 4th inning. And out comes good old Trent Thornton, who if I never see again, but I know I will probably in a few hours, I would be happy. Trent Thornton, who by the way is like 6th on the team in innings pitched this year.
Yes, basically other than the starting rotation guys, he is chewing up the innings. My friend Eric, and I messaged you about this as well. You've seen him more than you've seen Jordan Romano this year, which is not good.
Yes, and his usage of Romano is another great point. He is maybe the worst bullpen managing manager I've ever seen in my life. And let's put aside the fact that also all the little intangible things that managers do that don't really matter, he also doesn't do. His consistency in letting guys be left out to wear it is very confusing and strange. Not that getting tossed is necessarily a good quality in a manager, but like, to not sound too Jays talky, sometimes you gotta get yourself fucking tossed. Like, Pete Walker got tossed last night. And, like, he's just... And the Trent Thornton thing last night is it's just waving a white flag. Like, the team... Yes, the team is struggling to score runs, and they did not even score 4 runs last night, which is not on him. But, like, you're only down 4 runs in the 3rd with this supposedly vaunted, like, highly thought of offense. And you're bringing in fucking Trent Thornton, who immediately gives up another run. Like, what does that game look like when they load the bases in the 8th down 4-1 instead of 5-1? Or in the 9th when it's 4-2 instead of 5-2? And it's not that that one decision is a fireable decision, but he seems to be making them almost every day. And I would say that there's only, like, in his defense, loosely, there's only like 4 or 5 losses this year. You can really be like, that's on Charlie.
Sure.
But they are currently in a situation because of the way they've been playing where they can't really afford any more of those losses.
Listen, I'm sick here. That like, since our last episode, Jake, we recorded on Wednesday the 18th. They lost a game that night 8-5, then they lost 4-1, then they won 3-0, then they lost 5-3, then they won 2-1, then they lost 5-2. They have not scored more than 3 runs in the week since we talked. This is the greatest offense we had ever seen. This is we had no loss for, you know, ways to deify them and to sing the praises. And now we are sitting here and they haven't scored three runs in a game in a week. I don't love that. It upsets me deeply. The losses to Washington, horrendous. Again, the everything about the Detroit game. To echo your Charlie Montoyo sort of mentions here. Good Lord, that pinch hit into a bunt into a. Listen, the fucking Tigers basically were standing in the batter's box waiting for that bunt to get down. routinely, I mean, that's not a nice play, but get that out at third, and then you just knew double play ball was coming. It sickened me deeply. And I feel dumb all the time, Jake, about things that I say on this show or ways that I feel about things. Perhaps never dumber than after the deadline when we laid down who was in the bullpen and me saying, well, you know, it's not really that bad. Brad Hand has been fucking terrible. Brad has been fucking terrible.
Basically unpitchable.
Basically, yeah. Mays has been great, but he unfortunately had a little bit of an injury problem. But then you're looking at, God, I don't even know who you turn to now when you need...
Simber's the only guy other than Romano who I'm like, okay.
And how many times are you going to run Simber out there? I mean, right, and exactly. Taylor Saucedo, Trevor Richards is passable, I guess.
Yeah, Richards is fine.
Holy moly, I am...
But to your point, Tim Mayza as your third most confident... Like, nothing against Tim Mayza. He's been very good. But when he's your third most, you know, reliable guy, that's not great. We're at the point where last night I was talking with a friend of ours about should they pick up Sean Doolittle, who has been, like, not good.
Christ.
I just feel... The frustrating thing... I mean, oh my God, there's so many frustrating things. The two things that I can't get past are not even the offense disappearing and the bullpen. It's the fact that the starting pitching has been excellent to extremely good.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to say that the really shitty part is the starters have been incredible in August.
Yeah, you can maybe say not Barrios last night, but also he struck out 6 in 3 innings, and it was only 4 runs in the first inning.
Yes.
Which, like, should be surmountable. And that's, like, the worst pitching performance of the month from the starters. The other thing that's really frustrating is the Athletics and Red Sox are basically standing there being like, please take the wild card from us.
Yeah.
You said earlier, if you were sitting here saying the season is over, you wouldn't blame me. The emotional part of my brain is absolutely there.
Sure.
The emotional part of my brain is like, there's no fucking way this team's going to pull together. That being said, all it took was a fucking double from Vlad and a fist pump on Monday for me to be like, no, they're going to do it. But the rational part of me is like, just by, and again, this has been a question mark after the last 7 days, but just by virtue of the remaining schedule, they're still in it.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Have
10 games. Nothing we said last week about the remaining schedule other than squandering those games against those 5 games, basically. So of the 22 we talked about last week, they squandered 5. There's still 17 games against Detroit, Minnesota, and Baltimore. 10 games against the Orioles, who are seemingly setting records for how bad they are right now. And that just, and the fact that the A's and the Red Sox are struggling, it's just, try as they might, they are not out of it.
They certainly are trying. Holy geez. I appreciate that. I appreciate that because I am out of look at the schedule for, because we looked at the schedule and we said, oh man, Washington, Seattle, Detroit, here it comes. The Yankees have won 11 straight games, by the way.
Yeah, that's also driving me crazy.
Listen, the Blue Jays elimination number is 26. So they don't have
33 games left, I think.
They don't have a lot of time here. I think some folks have put it, did the math better than we could, that when they had 40 games left, they basically had to go 30-10. I think that is now down to like 29-8. I want to say something like that. That's to get to 90 something. Oh boy. How did we get here, Jake? What a fucking mess. What a fucking absolute travesty, because this team was so primed, and I hope that we are putting the magic into the air, and that every now and then we will speak passionately about something only to be proven exactly wrong the next week. So I am putting all my eggs into this basket because, it snowballs for me, right? I start to get upset about one thing, and then I spiral into like, well, now, like, Simeon is going to be pretty tough to lure back, and every single Robbie Ray start makes him a little bit more money, and you know, how much are they going to shell out for those guys? And if they don't, who the hell was playing second next year? Are they giving it back to Kevin Biggio, who unfortunately has had a really rough year and can't seem to stay healthy and may not even play half the season? He's at 77 games, and there's mentioned he has a UCL sprain and will be out for be shut down. So, holy cow! I, at the risk of spiraling, yeah, I think, you know, there are some things that I have thought. You know, that rotation not being the issue here is not something that I ever thought would be a thing, but how good has it been to have Alek Manoah step up? And if he hadn't done that, God only knows where they are every fifth day. They're relying on it seems like a million years ago, but Anthony Kay was making starts. Who knows who would be in that slot? They let TJ Zoit go, which I think I am almost already forgotten about. He's a St. Louis Cardinal now. I don't even know if he knew that. Yeah, I am. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because obviously there's a million things, and that's what's so frustrating about this year is that you name a thing that can go wrong with a team. They've had a period this year where that has happened, and the one thing they haven't had really, other than again the 11 game homestand, is they really haven't had a period where everything went right. Right when the offense was incredible, the bullpen didn't work.
Yeah,
when the bullpen sorted it out, the offense has, you know, falling apart. Now the pitching is the strength, and they can't score two runs against the Detroit Tigers. They let quite literally Drew Hutchison, not literally 2021 Drew Hutchison, comeback story of the year, wasn't in the league. ERA was in the sixes when he started that game, and they couldn't batter him. They let, you know, they faced the Tigers, who were a bad team, are obviously rebuilding, but they got the worst part of their rotation. Willie Peralta, like, they're, this is just, I get so worried. Tyler Alexander threw seven innings of four hit, one run ball. I'm growing concerned about a number of things. And I think the number one for me right now is this feeling that, like, I hope we don't look back at this and really end up feeling like this was a massive opportunity of a season that they just never managed to seize. Because listen, we talked about next year, no matter what, they're coming back with Ryu, and they're coming back with Ray, or pardon me, not Ray, they're coming back with Manoah, and they're coming back with Berríos, and they're set up a little bit that the pitching isn't, you know, they're not going to have to completely overhaul the rotation next year, at least, but boy, it just never came together yet, and, you know, there have been some small things behind the plate, they've had some injury things. Santiago Espinal has now made more starts at third than anybody else. I don't think anybody expected, but he's also been a pleasant surprise. They've also obviously dealt with not having Springer for an extended period. I just really worry that, and this is irrational, I'm way ahead, but I worry that we're going to be a few years down the line here and be like, man, 2021, that team was ready, and they just didn't have, they didn't have the bullpen figured out early enough, or they didn't have enough lefties in the lineup. Whatever we end up saying, it is the doom, or they went with Charlie for too long, however you want to slice it. It is worryingly feeling to me like this is a season that was a really nice opportunity gone to waste.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the idea of, you know, we're going to get into this a little bit in the mailbag because there's a question about this, so I don't want to get too deep into my answer for this, but your point about how nothing has worked at the same time, I think really hits the nail on the head as to why this season has felt so frustrating. Like, you can take away, like, you know, we talked at length and everyone unanimously agrees that the Toronto Raptors' whole franchise path got fucked up by playing in Tampa for a year. And I think there's decent argument to be made that the Jays having to start in Dunedin themselves was a detriment. Buffalo, not so much, but Florida for sure. And, you know, they're the jumping around to three homes, the injuries, the George Springer of it all. Like, there's, I think your point is exactly correct, that just nothing has worked at the same time, and that's what makes it feel so frustrating. And how, I don't know if we're going to look back and be like, man, I think we'll look back and say that team is ready. I don't know if we're going to look back and say that's a missed opportunity in terms of championships, because, like, the Dodgers and the Giants and the Padres, the Yankees are all, and the Rays are all so good that...
Fucking Giants.
I hate it. Fucking drives me crazy. But I don't, it's not a season where it's like, wow, the World Series is right there. It is a season, I think, where the playoffs, we'll be able to say, wow, the playoffs were right there. And then how the next few seasons go will dictate how much that, how annoying that truly is. But I just think it is, it's just so frustrating and alternately hopeful and deflating. Like, the, you know, the last two games, I think, for me anyway, pretty much sum up the entire season, and that they were down 1-0 to the White Sox because they couldn't fucking score. And then Vlad hits that double to tie the game, pumps his fist a bunch. Skidham's going nuts. The bench vibes come back for a second. And it's like, they're right there. They can pull this together and do all these things. And then last night, you know, Vlad's up, down 4, bottom 8, whole building on their feet, and he grounds into the double play, which for my money is not the worst moment of the season, but definitely the most deflating. And I think that's that balance of just like, we're up and we're ready to go, and this team can weather any storm, no matter how tough, because they got the bench vibes and everything, and they've got the talent. And then 24 hours later, it's, wow, this team's not going to do anything. It has been an exhausting season from that respect.
I will counter that the most routine ground ball I've ever seen in my life, getting bounced on.
That also.
Two out in the ninth.
That was no good.
It's probably the most. But I, point taken. Speaking of Vlad, we're going to get into specifics here on the other side of this message about, well, I'm very concerned, to be totally honest. So we have talked about the manager, we have talked about a little bit of team construction, talked a little bit about just shit luck, timing, your point about relocation, all these different things that have been big picture problems with what is wrong with this team in August. Listen, zooming in, you hate Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and even more specifically, Bo Bichette. They have been quite bad in the month of August, from not themselves to straight up quite bad. I'll read Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s line in August. 3 home runs, 1 double, 7 runs driven in, hitting .230, .323, .345 for a .668 OPS. That is a drop of 300 points from his previous worst month. Bo Bichette, for comparison, he's played 20 games, 2 doubles, 1 home run, power completely gone, 6 driven in, 5 walks, 20 strikeouts, .228, .271, .291 for a .562 OPS. That is 200 points lower than his previous low, and .562, I am sure you are aware, Jake, is really bad. .562 is Danny Jansen is hitting .595 on the year. If you get an idea of a full season of .562 is about what Josh Palacios has pulled so far. It's just above Breivik Valera. It is. Am I framing this properly? What a .562 OPS is out of a player like Bo Bichette, who is hitting first or second or third every single day. It's extremely concerning. I'm extremely concerned, especially about Bo. I know he's a guy that works himself in and out of these things, and, you know, one of those guys that his approach is his approach, and for all the ways that it works, it ends up not working. What has been the grand scheme of these guys, it's really come to focus late in games, close in games. That is a matter of, you could say it's a matter of timing, it's a matter of luck. You could also say, if you wanted to, that it's a matter of opposing pitchers understanding that these guys are very aggressive. They like to ambush. I don't even know. Bo's first game in the leadoff spot, he swung at the first five pitches that he saw. it's one of those things, right, when they are ambushing guys and when they are teeing off on everything and when every at-bat you're like, you can't miss a single pitch because these guys eat this shit for breakfast. The downside of it is when they are going through the top half of the lineup and it takes six pitches to get the first three guys out, it's pretty fucking frustrating, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's... how to put this? I think Vlad is... I think fatigue has to be part of it.
Sure.
Like, he's gone pretty much straight back to what he was doing last year, which is just everything is into the ground. And it's very frustrating. And it's concerning. Bo, I think your point about teams sort of figuring it out is probably part of it. You know, they are very aggressive. That's always been even the knock in sort of the late inning struggles, is that this team doesn't really adjust and that they're all aggressive all the time. And when your job is to, is you're a reliever and your job is just throw 100 for three batters, that's not always a great matchup for the hitter. I also think the book is just out on some of these guys. Like, so for everyone on this team, so many low and away sliders.
Yes.
Just hacked at. And it's, that's, there's too many of them for it to be a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I think it's just gotta be intention and purpose and scouting and all those things that good teams do, or bad teams even do. Like, pitchers just in the major leagues, that's just how it goes. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, well, they're, you know, they're bad and we should give up the hope we had for them just a few short weeks ago, because that's obviously not the case. But for this season, it is getting close to that point.
Running out of time.
Yeah, that's it. They're running out of time. Getting real close to just it being too late, or it being, you know, maybe they're just not good enough. But then you look at the roster on paper and what we know they can do, and you say, well, if this isn't good enough, what the hell is?
Right.
Well,
who the hell is good enough? Agreed. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's a manager thing. Truly, I'm not even trying to put this on Charlie. I genuinely don't know. I don't know if it's a mentality thing. I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know if it's just the whole damn season and moving around and COVID and everything catching up with them. But then, if, you know, they can maybe make the larger excuse because they started on the road. But other than that, every team's dealt with it. And so, tough in a lot of ways. I don't know. It's very frustrating. It's very puzzling. And they have, you know, we like to play the if this goes right game. Well, I think they have 7 days to fix it.
A week from now, you're saying, a week from now, if they're still five back, you're coming in here and you're saying season's over?
If they, let's look at this. So they have two games against the White Sox this week, and then they get the Tigers and Orioles to bring us to next Wednesday. So that's two games against the White Sox and six against the literal Tigers and Orioles. In those, if they go 3-5 in those 8 games, it's over.
38 games remain.
If they go 4-4 in those 8 games, I think it's over. They have to, not to make declarative radio, sports radio things, they have to win both series against the Tigers and Orioles.
I don't think that's for me to unreasonable. Take
no, it's not.
Yeah. Because but a bunch of people like to shit on, yeah, you know, being stuck in the American League East. They had their opportunity to play the Tigers and the Nats and completely squandered. And what's probably most annoying, right, is they're a wild pitch and a routine ground ball away from sweeping the Tigers.
Yes. Which I don't know if that brings you hope or shoots it down even more.
I don't know either. I said that as if it was like an optimistic thing, but I don't know if it makes it better or worse.
And to the point about if we really want to get like actual mathematical as to when I think the season is over, following the 8 games we just talked about in the next week, they immediately follow that with 2 series against the Yankees and Athletics. So
that's it.
September 10th, September 9th is the last game against the Yankees. So I'll give them that long, I think. Because if they split the remaining games and then sweep the A's and the Yankees, obviously it's a whole other conversation. But I will give them September 9th. At 10:30 p.m. on September 9th, we will know if this team is making the playoffs or not. Or if they have a chance, I should say.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, listen, September 9th, you're talking about they're going to have 20 games left.
A good chance I'm checked out way before that.
Well, and you know, that's all, honestly probably also part of the frustration is, you know, I don't think I've watched this many, we talked about it before, I don't think I've watched this many games in a season since probably 2016 or 2015, or 2017. I guess I got off the 2017 by now, but I, you know, they've played 124. I've probably seen nearly all of like 115 of those games. Like, it's, that's not, you know, we're big fans. We're not 162 fans, and usually there's basketball would be on, or you just, you know, you don't catch certain things. I think seeing it every single day, being invested, expecting them to be, you know, taking this step is probably part of it, the everyday onslaught of it. But it truly does seem like every single day it's something completely different goes wrong, and it's almost impressive how many different things they've managed to have go wrong over the course of this season.
Truly is. Really, really is. And just like, you're like the routine ground ball on Sunday.
Good Lord.
Like, I'm not even sure how that even went wrong. I watched it with my own eyes and I'm still trying to figure it out.
And I mean, listen, Marcus Semien has been an excellent defender for basically all of the year. He has been as reliable as anybody in the lineup. So you're not like, oh man, Semien really, really blew that up. But
and it's also, you know, we talk a lot about in the show, especially on our, you know, story time episodes, about the Raptors run, even the Jays runs in 15 and 16, about how they're all made up of these tiny moments that kind of give you a feeling that maybe this is going to be a thing, whether it's, you know, DeMar's first game back where he lost the ball to Kawhi in 2019, or it's, you know, the Marco Estrada game in 2015, or, you know, there's just moments in seasons that kind of, in retrospect, indicate that something is happening. And the Jays have had some good ones. Like, look, we all sat here after that Red Sox game where it's like, that's the moment. That's the moment.
Yes.
But they go the other way too. And that Marcus Semien ground ball on Sunday was kind of like, maybe it's just not going to happen. Maybe this is just not. And, you know, there's so many reasons. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say I know the answer, and I'm not going to sit here and say they're bad or anything, but, you know, watching that, I was like, maybe it's just not going to happen.
Baseball Reference has their playoff odds at this moment 15.5% to make the postseason. That feels about right. That feels about right. It would take
that seems right. That definitely seems right.
It would take an 85% event. But yeah, as you said, they do sort of have not destiny in their own hands, but they have a chance to like meaningfully make an impact on their chances here. And I'm with you. I'm going to hold out until that A's series before I make my declarative statement. Again, I did say, if you are the type of person that wants to declare them dead in the water, I won't hold that against you. That's 10 games away. Like you said, the end of the Oakland series is 10 games away, and then they go into New York. So that is that will leave you at, what do they have left? 38 games? They would have 28 games left heading into that Yankees series to make up whatever the deficit may be, because they currently sit 5.5 back, which is not that bad. It feels like they should be 9 back. It feels like they should be like they should be DOA. Maybe that's unrealistic, but as you said, the Red Sox begging to be passed in the standings. Oakland begging to get passed in the standings. These teams would love to not play in the playoffs, and the Jays cannot help themselves. It is it's been a very unique season in terms of maybe because, Jake, before 2015, we were so used to the team just not ever making the push that we didn't ever expect it. And then from 2017 to 2019, we just knew they weren't very good, so it didn't matter. I think maybe the idea right now is what's making it so tough is like it makes sense that they would be good enough. It really does, and also they just haven't. They just won't.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I think that, you know, we're so starved for a good baseball team, and I don't think it's unrealistic to say that the pandemic and the just shit world we're in exacerbates that desire. Like, I don't know how much that matters, but like, I think it's part of it. And, you know, on the one hand, we're getting what we want. They're in the playoff race in the end of August. So, like, objectively, this is what we asked for. It's just happening in the most obnoxious way possible.
You said it. I'll say this. Friday, middle of that meltdown, the Alejandro Kirk pinch hit into a bunt that everybody saw coming that became nothing. Shortly after that, moments after that happened, I switched to wrestling, and it was maybe the smartest and best decision I've ever felt myself make, because I was...
I will say this on that note.
Levitating.
Maybe the angriest I've been on Twitter in months was just seeing all of you immediately start tweeting with joy about wrestling. And in a group chat of mine was the same deal. Well, I just sat and stewed angrily about the Blue Jays.
There was a moment.
I was furious.
A moment where I was like, I should stick with this because it's going to be maybe it's something. But I was like, no, I know this CM Punk thing is going to be one of the best moments I've ever seen in wrestling. And I fully committed to just being like, nope, Jays go on mute. I won't even look unless Twitter freaks out. And I am so happy with my choice. We're going to get into that in a minute. But closing this out, that was a good 35 minutes of ranting and every problem we have in our lives in terms of baseball. I will end it as you were able to do, is I'm going to keep the hope alive for another 15 days.
Yeah,
we've gone this far, and to the points about Vlad and Bo, right? They do seem tired. They do seem maybe the book is out a little bit, but I do cling to the fact that everything was also working for them with this approach, right? Like, it was also going really well with this approach. Maybe not so much Vlad expanded his own a little bit, but like Bo's ambush stuff, like that style of his, for as cold as he has now gone in the last little bit, his career line is still 196 games, 294, 340, 492, 125 OPS plus. He's still a 300 home run, 100 RBI average over 162 games. He's still a very good major league player. He's just sort of going through what I would say is his first real extended slump as a major leaguer. And we forget sometimes, not forget, but again, you know, still 23 years old. Vlad is 22. And finally getting Vlad realized was really exciting and really cool. I think, you know, back to the perspective of like most of your top prospects, you would be thrilled if they were debuting at 22, 23. And these are guys that we are relying on at the top of a lineup for a playoff push.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's also sort of the same way that we are pot committed as fans to see out at least the next 15 games. You know, I won't fault anyone for tapping out mid-September if they continue as they are. But, you know, the team's also pot committed with who they got. You know, you go to the dance with who you brought, kind of thing. And you just gotta hope they figure it out in the next 15 days. I will say, if George Springer isn't back on Friday, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, listen,
I think that's a big obviously that's a big factor in everything we're talking about.
It seems like losing, like him limping off the field, for how good they were feeling, for how high the vibes were, for how much fun they were having, it seems like him limping off, and again, projecting here, right? It feels like him limping off the field was a major, like, these guys had a moment where they were like, oh man, like maybe this dream isn't happening, and it's been hard for them to shake out of that. And again, projecting, probably not even really true, but it's hard not to feel that way as somebody watching.
Yeah, I completely agree. The I don't know if it's me projecting or what, but the vibe, the vibes are not what they once were, for sure.
People putting that home run jacket on aren't nearly as excited as they. I think Corey Dickerson had the all-time saddest home run jacket donning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. That is it. We are going to relax a little bit. We're going to talk music. We're talking about wrestling, talking about television, and of course, your mailbag questions where baseball will come up again, and we'll get all fired up once more on the other side of this. We return to wash that taste out of our mouths of the first half of this show. We begin with some distractions, some things you can do with your time that isn't watching baseball, because there are 21 to 20 and a half hours of your day that you can spend doing things that aren't watching baseball. We start with music. Jake, one of the greatest minds in music out there right now, one of the tastemakers of a generation. What are you, my friend, naming as your song of the week this week?
Song week this week is Just Go by Arlo Parks. I've talked about Arlo Parks before. She's great. I'm only bringing her up again because her album from this year, which is where this song is from, called Collapse in Sunbeams, is rocketing up my 2021 list because it kicks ass. And you should listen to it because it's very good. And that's all I have.
Good pick. My pick, it's going to be obvious, right? It's going to be obvious that obviously my choice is the return of CM Punk. I talked about it on here last week and the week before. And I don't know if I really did justice as to why CM Punk returning is so exciting. I think that's something that I would like to sort of explain is, you know, people, wrestlers do the coming out of retirement gimmick. That happens every month, almost. Like, it's not, nobody, the old saying, nobody stays retired in wrestling, even if it's because of injuries. Daniel Bryan, Edge, it happens all the time. The guys find a way, get cleared, and they come back, and they have a return, and it's emotional. CM Punk is a different story, because you are somebody, Jake, that's heard me talk about wrestling on this show for years, and
a couple times.
Yes, indeed. And there'll be moments where I would talk about, man, wrestling was so good this week. This one good thing happened, and it was so fun. And that idea that, like, when wrestling is good, it's one of the most fun things in the world to watch, because you just sort of, you get surprises, you get these dramatic moments that you sort of can't get anywhere else in entertainment or in sports. Like, I think Marvel is sort of getting to this ground where, like, the shows will have debuts or people show up places they're not supposed to be, or like this exciting stuff, and it really, the fans really get behind it, and it's really fun. I think that's great, and I think that is something really important, especially nowadays in entertainment, and can be hard to do with how ubiquitous something like Marvel can be. CM Punk returning. CM Punk is a guy who, above all else, loves pro wrestling. And 10 years ago, he did what was called the pipe bomb promo, where he was like very clearly was fed up with the state of pro wrestling. And he did a great job and always sort of embodied this idea of the fan that understood what wrestling could be, and what is it so intoxicating about those great moments in wrestling is you get this glimpse as to like how good wrestling could be. And for the last, I'll say 3-4 years probably, WWE has been like really bad. Like people stop, like I haven't watched WWE in a long time. It's no longer marketed to me. It's just not my thing. It hasn't been very good. And CM Punk 7 years ago, basically, walked away from the business and was like, it's just not fun to wrestle like this. It's just not fun to be in this company. It's not fun to have nothing mean anything, and to have no build, and for the stories to not go anywhere, and for there to be no logic, and to just recycle it every single week. It wasn't fun for him. And as a wrestling fan, you know, one of the biggest and longest debates was like, will CM Punk ever come back? Was like the easiest sort of debate. And for a long time, the answer was an obvious no from me because wrestling hadn't changed enough. There was no place for him to come back to that he would enjoy more than anything. And even more than Punk debuting and being back and that incredible moment, a 9-minute standing ovation, a 9-minute promo from him, genuine emotion in the crowd. I don't remember being that pumped up about anything in a long time. I was running around. I was pounding my chest. I was literally hooting and hollering, having an unbelievably great time. Underneath all of that is the recognition as wrestling fans that we're back on the right track with the way that wrestling is, because not that it's perfect, not that it's everything is right and it's great, but it's good enough that this guy who was so like his story, like he was sort of a ring rat, a guy that like didn't get along well with his birth family and sort of like wrestling was the only thing that he cared about or liked, and it was just sort of like it was such a huge part of him, to see it beaten out of him was just like so impossible. And the fact that he is back is just this sign to us as wrestling fans that like it's not just our eyes, like it is clearly back at a space and has the right momentum that a guy like this would decide to come out of retirement at 42 and be like, I got to be a part of this. It's so exciting that I have to be involved. Obviously, he's getting a ton of money, but the moment that he was able to create on Friday is really exciting. And a big part of that excitement is just knowing that like the business is obviously going in the right direction if somebody like CM Punk wants to be involved again. So it makes me really optimistic and very happy. And I can't wait to see where this goes and what he does, because he is unlike anybody else to have ever done it. So CM Punk returning on Friday at Rampage was everything I wanted to be, plus. So it was awesome.
That's great. Yeah, I wasn't really sure what was going on other than the fact that CM Punk was back and or involved. It was very clear from my Twitter feed that everyone was extremely excited. And I think that's always nice when people get excited about things. And I think your point about communal things are great moments. And that's part of why I think we care so much about the Jays, too. We want those communal moments where everyone's pumped up about one thing, because they're fun as hell.
Good comparison. Move into television. Jake, anything on TV catch your eye?
We started watching Top Chef, Ooh. A new show you've never heard of. We've been sort of impressed to watch it by some friends for a long time now, and we just never really got around to it, but it's great fun. It's exactly what I thought it was going to be, which isn't a bad thing. It's, you know, reality competition shows with cooking, which is
right.
Fun, good stuff.
We plowed through a bunch this week. We watched all of The Chair over the weekend, which is Sandra Oh. It's about she becomes the chair of a English department at a lower Ivy League school. Sort of a mixed comedy drama, sort of explores racism and sexism in those institutions. And interesting take, an interesting beat. And as well, 9 Perfect Strangers, which is your, it's just like White Lotus again, only slightly different. Nicole Kidman, who's it? It's a great cast. 9 Perfect Strangers is a great cast. Let me see if I get this. It's an Amazon, Amazon show. But basically, Nicole Kidman is like a guru who runs a meditation and recovery clinic. Nicole Kidman, Melissa McCarthy, Michael Shannon, who is A++, Luke
always.
Evans,
literally always.
Oh yeah, Luke Evans, Samara Weaving. Who else would people know? Manny Jacinto from Good Place. Bobby Cannavale. It's Regina Hall. It's a really good. It's a very, very good.
That's a very good cast.
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. I think. Listen, I'm not an acting guru, but I think Nicole Kidman may be the worst performer on the show.
Wow.
Everybody else seems to sort of be running laps around her. She's got this weird, like breathy, like I don't know. She's the guru, so it's sort of built around her. So maybe I'm being
careless,
but. Yeah, 9 Perfect Strangers. Check it out. We enjoyed it. And cool. It's only 3 episodes deep. So there's new episode comes out on today, on Wednesday, on August 25th. So on every Wednesday after that. 8 episode miniseries, which I enjoy a format of.
Yes. The not the shorter the better, but 8 episodes is a nice, easy intake.
Tell us a story, finish the story, and then we'll move on. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Not that hard. We went to the mailbag from Will. First question, which six Toronto neighborhoods would you have on the Sportsfeld home run jacket?
Ooh, well, it got to be Annex, because I've been in the Annex for like 8 years.
Yeah, we go Annex, Junction, Annex, Junction. I lived in Forest Hill, so I'd probably put Forest, although it's like snobby ass.
Yeah, I grew up on the Danforth, so I put the Danny on there.
Annex, Junction, Danforth, Forest Hill. I guess it counts as Annex. You probably do like that Ossington, Dundas and Ossington.
Yeah, Bloordale.
Bloordale. You got beaches. Probably you probably do beaches as well.
I guess.
It's tough, man. There's a lot of neighborhoods.
Little Italy.
We're not putting Queen West. We're not putting King West.
I'll put Little Italy on there.
We'll take Forest Hill out. That's fine.
Yeah.
Nobody really reps Forest Hill.
You know could I mean? Do St. Clair West. You live there. I went to high school there.
There you go. SC Dub.
There you go.
So what are we saying? We're saying Annex, St. Clair, Annex, St. Clair West, Little Italy. I feel like we don't have anything East End.
Danforth.
Bloordale. Beaches.
Yeah.
Book it. No city place. The team plays in city place. I need to put on a jacket. the Ted Lasso thing. So I was like trying to get us engagement on our mailbag question. So I decided I'll just make a... Apparently, if you tweet about Ted Lasso now, that's like...
Apparently.
People go, insanity. You nailed it. It's just like, why this show of all shows? I feel partially...
Yeah,
is it because season one, everyone was like, oh, this is a show people should watch? And then like... Is it because it won Emmys? Like what... Why is this show fucking ruin people's brains?
I have a few theories on that.
Because, like, I liked it. I like it.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Like, we're a little behind, so, like, I haven't seen the episodes that have made everyone go fucking crazy yet, but...
Jesus.
I really enjoy it, but, yeah, the discourse is awful.
Well, no spoilers, Jake. They do a Christmas episode.
I know that. I just haven't seen it yet. So, that's the next one we have to watch.
That's the one that I was like, why are they doing a Christmas episode in August? And I bet if I watched it at Christmas time, it would be a different story, but...
I feel like... So, from what I've heard... Is that they're airing it in a weird order. That episode was shot after the season or maybe in the season, but they're putting it in the middle of the season. I don't know why, but I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to comment on that. But no, I think it's because we don't understand how to watch television anymore as people. Like, I think everything has to be the best thing ever and like peak TV or it's dog shit.
Right.
First of all. Second of all, I think the idea of just like, I think because it's on a streaming service, the idea of a show being released every week that's like a sitcom is sort of like, cause sitcoms are just nice, right? Like there's no,
yeah,
there's a through line plot, but there's no like, you know, you're not, it's, there's no like real heavy cliffhangers. But I think if Ted Lasso was on like FX, no one would have an issue.
Yeah.
Because we're used to, cause then it's like on TV and you're used to like waiting a week to watch a sitcom. But now it's, I don't know, I feel like no one can take in television that isn't supposed to be a 10-hour movie anymore.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point.
And also, people are going fucking crazy about it in like bad ways, and the season's like half over. Let them finish their story.
People ominously keep saying, I've seen all 8 episodes and you should relax. People keep saying
yeah.
that.
But like, that's what I mean. Like, let the people finish their job before you say this is shit and I hate it.
It's like booing the setup of a comedian's act.
Exactly. And it's like, and also the overarching idea is it's like Ted Lasso. Like it's a nice little sitcom. I understand. I think it's ridiculous also, but I understand why something like Game of Thrones is analyzed to the death.
Mm-hmm.
Or The Wire or Breaking Bad or any of those, even something like, you know, White Lotus, or I'm trying to think of newer examples, you know, Big Little Lies or something. I understand why those are so analyzed. This is a 28-minute sitcom. The whole purpose of those shows is to not do that. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I think it's insane.
Yeah. So if Ted Lasso had left his wallet at home on a date, would he go back and get it to pay, or let his date pay for it?
I feel like he'd probably go back and get it. He's a nice guy.
I feel like he would let his date. He would if the date offered to pay, he'd let them, right?
Yeah, probably that's true.
Skip the Rick asked when they're going to name this sitcom Roy Kent. It's about him now. I don't want to spoil that for you, but it is pretty Roy Kent centric.
Roy Kent is the best character though, so that's fine.
Yeah, Roy Kent rocks. Evan S. After watching this, which is a guy failing to beat the Freeze, who is the Atlanta Braves bullpen, or pardon me, warning track race. Which halftime intermission event would you most excel at? Is there a particular event you would love to participate in, even if you made a fool of yourself?
So I'd be terrible at it, but I love like half court heaves.
I was gonna say half court shot is nice because it's like if you miss it, it doesn't really matter. Like no one expects you to make it. So if you
exactly
there was the one. What was the one? It's like layup, free throw, 3-pointer, half court.
Yeah, anything that has extremely low chance of success is what you want, I think, because then it's just like a bonus that if you hit it, because like you said, if you miss a half court shot by 30 feet, everyone's just like, yeah.
Yeah. And the one in the hockey where it's like the puck is just big enough to go through the goalie, the wooden goalie, and you shoot it from half.
Mm-hmm.
One of those. Those are always fun. I always like that. I always like the center ice puck to the middle end.
Because you can't really look like a fool.
If you ever see it go in, it's like the craziest thing you see that entire game.
Yeah, like the guys who have to kick field goals or something.
Yeah. Jay Nielsen with a nice fantasy thought. If you were a major league pitcher, what pitches would you have in your arsenal?
Ooh, when I was a pitcher as a kid, I had a fastball.
Mm-hmm.
I had a curveball that I knew how to do the grip, but I could never really get it to curve. But I'm going to say it's in there. So I would have a fastball. I'd have a curveball. I'd have a slider because it's my favorite pitch. And I might just be a three pitch guy. I'd have a changeup. I would want to be like a. My favorite kind of pitcher is, you know, Ryu Estrada style.
Right.
So I'd need a changeup in there.
Yeah, fastball, circle change that moves down and away. So two seam, four seam, right? You want the
yeah.
tunneling. Two seam, four seam, circle change, knuckle curve. That's my
knuckle curve. I like
only that. Because I'm a fancy boy, right? I can't just throw regular changeup, regular curveball. Got to be knuckle curve.
Right.
It's my brain, you know. But yeah, that's my X, circle, triangle, square. Those are my. And I feel like I would try to add a slide piece, but it would get hit too hard, and I would just stop throwing it. Jay, has there ever been a meal you had at a restaurant? When you made it at home, you realized that restaurant had made it wrong. That's an interesting and weird question.
I don't think so, but
made it, like, there's nothing made off it top wrong of my head. Is a weird way to phrase that.
Can you make food wrong if it's good?
And if you're a restaurant, it's sort of this is the way that you do it, right?
Right, exactly. That's what I mean.
I've had meals where I was like, I could make this better than that. One of the meals, I took my dad out for a meal at an Italian place on St. Clair when we first moved there. And it was like, it had all the trappings of like a nice Italian place that you'd never heard of. And then we went in and I was like, I can't believe how bad this is. I was like, wow, are they using like, the Brillo pasta and like just,
oh no.
I was amazed. I was like, I can't, it looked 100% authentic. And we went in and I'm like, oh, this is just a box of it was amazing. I don't want to say it, but man, oh man, it was among the most disappointing meals I've ever had in my life.
That's a bummer. I hate that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Didn't it suck?
Being disappointed by a restaurant is one of the worst feelings in the world. I will say that.
It's funny how that works. I bet it's closed by now. Looking at my old street, I bet it's probably closed because they were like, well, this isn't going to survive. Because you look at it like, oh man, it's an old Italian couple, but nope. No mas. Prairie Jays, what's your favorite place for beers? Doesn't have to be a bar. Dock.
Ooh. Yeah. Nothing, dock for sure.
Nothing beats staring at a body of water and not being in the water. Whew. As good as it gets.
Yeah. Agreed. Hard agree.
And Midawesome, finally, we go back to where we started. Midawesome with an interesting question. Is this the most disappointing Jays season ever?
So this is what I wanted to talk, I sort of teased about talking about earlier. No. It might be the most frustrating, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, at least for me personally, I don't think anything will ever be as disappointing as 2013.
This may be a surprising answer for me, Jake. I think 2017 is the most frustrating year I've ever experienced as a Blue Jays fan.
But it was over so quickly.
I know. That's part of it. Is it how quickly it was like, oh, I don't need to watch this anymore. I would say that it, frustrating is when you keep going back, that's frustrating. Sticking around is frustrating. Disappointing is like you expected it to at least be interesting, to at least be competitive, and within 2 months you're like, oh, I don't need to watch this shit anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
2017 coming off back-to-back playoff pushes. They don't re-sign Edwin. They Donaldson looks like garbage. They don't like each other. They're not nice to each other. Like they hate each other. They're pricks. Nobody likes them because they just spent 2 years pissing all over the league, right? And being outwardly pricks to the entire league. we're dealing with like guys from that glory team either leaving or not being good anymore, and it went from like, you know, it's not a very strong division. Like it's pretty easy math to them being a wild card contender again this year to very quickly being like, oh, this team is not worth my time. So I think 2017 might be the most in terms of disappointing 2017 for me.
That's not a bad argument, actually. I don't entirely disagree. I think that 2013 was so disappointing because there was just so much hype after the big trade. You thought they were going to be good, and then they were just, I guess, similar to what you're saying with 2017. It was just kind of like, I don't even need to watch this for a little bit. But no, the reason I think this is not the most disappointing season is they're still in it. It's frustrating as hell, but like we just spent, whatever, an hour talking about how they're still in it. And, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, I still don't think it's most disappointing because all we wanted at the start of this year was for them to be interesting. And to your point, tuning out is worse than being frustrated. And I agree with that. This might be the most frustrating just because it's so schizophrenic, for lack of a better term, in terms of just like every day it's a good or bad. It's just different every day and for different ways you don't even see coming. But no, I don't think I can consider a season where they're five and a half back in August from a playoff spot as being disappointing.
Yeah. Keep in mind how many years we'd dreamt of five and a half back.
Exactly.
In September.
That's exactly it. But damn, it's frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Good candor. We move forward. Nothing left to do but answer whether we are sad or not sad for another week after this. And we close it out with that question that is oh so popular amongst ourselves and others, whether we are sad or not sad for another week. I will go first, and I'm going to, I guess it's a sad? I don't really know how to phrase this properly. I just wanted to bring up that my cousin fucked three of his fingers yeah, up really bad.
I saw that.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
He works at a factory here in the region, and he's not totally sure, because obviously these freak accidents happen in a matter of seconds, and next thing you know.
Sure.
He believes his hand got snapped up in a moving belt, bones and tendons crushed. He could still move them, but he has no feeling in them. He ended up doing a nerve graft and bone fusion, so he doesn't have knuckles.
I hate all of those words.
He doesn't have knuckles in his left hand anymore. Obviously, I wish him the greatest of recoveries, but I feel not bad, because if you were him, you'd understand. But like when he messaged me moments after it happened about it, my answer was that I'd been treated rudely by a customer on my corporate account, so we were both having pretty bad days. He's going to be okay, obviously. He still has the fingers, just like... We'll see the long-term thing, but yeah, shitty. But we'll see what turns out. Hopefully he ends up getting something out of this that isn't just a unworkable hand. I hope he's okay eventually. We're going to go see him this weekend, because obviously you almost lose an appendage. I'll come by and say hello. So
I think that's fair.
Quite literally, honestly, the least I could do. My cousin John. I hope he's doing okay. I can't wait to see him and make fun of him a little bit for losing his left hand in a factory accident.
Damn.
So I guess that's sad. I don't know why I said maybe not sad. Well, not sad because it didn't happen to me. Woo.
Yeah, there you go.
You remember last year, I was like really down bad about not having a job and not knowing what I wanted to do. I would have gotten killed on the job, like if I had gone into a trade. it's just like a fact, right? It's not even.
Oh, I think it's very clear that like we are not tradespeople, regardless of what we feel or don't feel about our respective careers.
Yeah,
like we're not tradespeople. I would hurt myself doing rudimentary work.
Yeah,
immediately.
Not even up for debate. I would die on the job if I was a tradesperson. I mean that with 100% sincerity. If anybody out there works with their hands around machinery or electricity or anything real, you know, my job is emails. So yeah, if you're a real person who does a real job, plenty of respect to you, because I would be killed within a month of working there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, workplace accidents are no joke, but again, would have killed me. Jake, this week, are you sad or not sad?
I'm going to go with not sad. I get to do a little bit of acting this week.
I love when you act. That makes me very happy.
It's literally one line and one day in the thing, so nothing really that exciting. But I haven't been on a set in like 2 years, especially with COVID, so I'm just excited to sort of be in that environment, even if it's only for like an hour or two. Nice to do the thing that I think I want to maybe do. You know what I mean?
I love that sincerity. That's great. I can't wait to see it and hear more about it and consume that content, baby. So the wheel works. Is you give us content, you actors and you entertainers, and I'm going to Ted Lasso your appearance in this show.
Just don't blink because you might miss it.
15 tweet threads about how Jake's appearance on this show is...
There's one line, yeah.
Misogyny at its... Well, listen, your last role, you literally were a misogynist. That was like
That's
quite
true.
Literally your description of your character.
That's very true. This one, not so much, but...
Anyway, I'm glad to hear it. That makes my heart warm when I hear about your acting, and when I see you in shows, it always brightens my day, so I'm really happy to hear that. Well.
I appreciate that. That's very nice.
Oh, and we appreciate the audience listening to another episode of Sports Fall. I know it was a little meltdown heavy, but we ended up with a workplace accident and some good news around the workplace. So that's...
We love that.
That's always good. That is it for another week. Patreon.com/SportsFeld if you'd like more SportsFeld, which of course you probably do if you listen this far. There is the mailbag every month, which we ought to record soon, Jake. I'm reminding you out loud on air as I remember myself. It's the 25th of the month.
Great idea, Sims.
Whoopsie. My life works all weekend, so I have plenty of free time to sneak off and record. Yes, we have mailbags at the end of the month. That'll be coming up probably this weekend by the sounds of it, as well as lookbacks to some of our best and worst moments in Toronto sports. This month we are finishing off the surprising late aughts, 2007, I guess it was. The 2007 Raptors, yeah. Nets. It was Chris Bosh and Andrea Bargnani and Jorge Garbajosa and Jose Calderon throwing a terrible entry pass in Game 6 to cost them the series against the Nets. We go back into that and where it came from, where it went, and how it all happened. All that and more. Patreon.com/SportsFeld. Sign up. Let us know how you feel, as well as, of course, Blue Monday, every Monday, where I have absolute meltdowns about the Blue Jays for the last 2 weeks. Tons of fun there. All that and more. Patreon.com/SportsFeld. In the meantime, we will talk to you next week right here on SportsFeld.